This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to the Ticket City Podcast. I'm Jeff Ketchum, joined today by the entire Orange Bloods gang. Jason Sukumel is here. Anwar Richardson is here. Dustin is here. And Alex, some of the crew feeling better than the others. Right before we were going on, Anwar letting us know that he's seen better days. Anwar, you hate Austin. Is that what you're telling me today? Like, you know, you may love your job. You may love a lot of things about it. But what it can sometimes do to you, you know, shouldn't be allowed on Earth.
I think I can be officially considered. Would it be called an Austinite? Is that what I'd be called?
Yes.
If I can complain about allergies. Like, I
allergies
think that's
and traffic.
Yes. All right. Well, traffic.
And Californians.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Californians are helping with the real estate. I'm not going to complain about them too much. They'll help with the real estate value. But the allergy thing, Alex, I don't know what's in the air. I think there's a lot more mold out there right now. But I'm literally like, there's this device where you use where you like suck the mucus out of your kid's nose. And it doesn't hit you. There's like a filter and stuff like that. I literally, in desperation mode, Hail Mary mode, used that on myself this morning to clear myself up.
I just can't believe it. I mean, I've used that thing on my kid. I've never even thought to use it on myself. Never once.
Anwar, my wife does the opposite. To use it on ourselves. Like, that sounds like if it's good for the kids, it should work for us too.
But it seems like as you're sucking it in through the mouth, is anything weird happening with it coming in the nose, coming out the nose? It seems like all those are
He's
sort of connected.
He's putting it in his nose. He's putting it in his nose.
Yeah, you know, but you're kind of the nozzle.
No, yeah, but you suck through the mouth. It's like, are those two, is the act of like you sucking in through the mouth, how does that affect what's going on in your nose? It would seem like maybe it makes it hard to do because it's like a cycle there.
Listen, it's desperation mode. I made it happen. I'm dying.
It's the molds, man. It's the molds that are up right now.
You're not talking about Anwar, like where you squirt like water through your nose and it comes out your mouth, right?
That's a neti pot.
My wife does that, and I walked in on her doing it, and I was like, that is the least sexy thing I've ever seen her do. It's like, I don't need to see
I tried
that.
The nasal thing. So I got this water pick that also has a nasal connection. I got a really fancy one. I tried that this morning. I think I almost like waterboarded myself. So I decided just not to do that again because it was like, tell us where they are. Tell us. It was horrible. So I was just like, I can't do that. I almost died. So I was like, I was just in desperation. I slept on my recliner last night, just out of pure, it's been miserable. But wow. Austin's fantastic.
Is when you know that we've had a fairly slow week in the world of Texas football. When we jump into a Valentine's Day podcast with like nasal decongestion stories, and I don't feel like we've buried the lead. It is one of these weeks where there's actually a lot to talk about, I think, in recruiting, because as you know, we'll talk about it, and certainly Jason will go into it, and we can have a fantastic recruiting conversation. It is a big weekend, and it's kind of the beginning of what will be a very busy weekend of circuits, a circuit of weekends in the recruiting world. Anything on the football side, anybody want to jump into before we go into the recruiting thing? Like I was thinking about it. It, you know, there hasn't been a portal kind of a week. You know, there's a grad transfer that's looking to come in. And I suppose that that's probably right at the top of the football discussion stuff, but we are in a little bit of a lull. I think, Anwar, for the good of the Texas football program, we've stopped at least for a while. We were in this, they're full on in workouts. Spring football starts on the 11th, and there's not like a hot transfer name this week that somebody is going out, or it's just quiet. I think is probably good for Texas football for the next few weeks.
Yeah, there's not much of anything going on at this point. Like you said, Ketchum, we went from the craziness of transfer portal in December, transfer portal a little bit in January. You know, the Shane Buechel, of course, you know, that transfer stuff. We know that Shane's not working out with the team anymore. So, you know, right now you just have that group that's just doing their workouts under Nancy McKnight. And it's really just the calm before the storm because, I mean, there's not much to glean from these kind of workouts. it's going to, then we go into spring, and I think that's where it picks up a little bit more. I know what's going to happen, Kesh, because then we're going to get in summer, and you're going to demand 7-on-7 workout notes. And I'm going to tell you, as I've told you for the past, it'll be year three, that they don't put an emphasis on 7-on-7. You'll claim BS. We'll do it back and forth all summer long. And then we'll do that until Big 12 media days. But for right now,
but look, man, that's like Pookie and New Jack City coming up to, like, you know, his dealer and being like, yo, man, I need a fix. And the dealer's like, how many times do I have to tell you that in the month of August, our supplier dries out a little bit, and like, you just, you know, you're going to have to go find your fix from someone else. Pookie from New Jack City is not sitting around patiently waiting. Well, I guess I won't be on drugs this week. That's not how it works. And all of our subscribers are a bunch of Pookies. And they, it's not me. They convince themselves that, because you know my whole thing about that, and quick little like 30-second rant. It's the totality of what you learn over the course of like a seven on, like weeks of working out that's really noticeable. It's never, you know, Alvonte Woodard caught a long pass tonight, so he's coming on. Like, it doesn't work that way, but that's the way people want to inhale their information. And such, they want to make huge conclusions based on really small pieces of information. And I beg of you to track it down, to give them their drugs so that Pookie doesn't go find another drug dealer.
Yes, but they have to understand, Pookie, that you got Ice-T and Mario Van Peebles who are shutting it down. And here's the other thing, Catchable. I'll stay with your New Jack City stuff for a second. What ultimately happens is, like, we let them know that something's going on with, like, you know, like with Nino Brown or Miss Rockabye Baby. And then if you tell them something in January, they hold it against you in September. Well, you said Alvonte Woodard looked great in July, and now he's not playing. You need to get your better sources, Orange Bloods. So it's like, okay, I'm sick.
But you know what's weird about that is, like, people are going to remember what they're going to remember, whether it's true or not true. Because Dustin and Jason can specifically they'll know this well. In the summer of 2010, the Texas football team was doing like shit. They were not doing well in the summer. And that at one point they played Texas State in a 7-on-7 game and they lost. And that got around that Texas had lost 7-on-7. And Dustin and I have a mutual friend. So I'm sure this guy told Dustin the same thing he told me. But this guy had seen some summer workouts. And at the time, I was sky high on Garrett Gilbert. Like, he was going to – Colt didn't have a real good senior season. So I thought it was a real tricky way of, like, setting the bar low without people realizing it for me to say that he would play better, like, as bad as Garrett Gilbert was in 2010. Like, I was factually correct in stating that he would have better games against Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Nebraska than Colt did the previous year, because Colt wasn't very good. And but all summer long, we reported that the offense was struggling, that Garrett Gilbert was struggling, but yet I was like separate from that. I was still predicting big things from Gilbert, but we were reporting in the summertime that the offense and he had not been playing well. Dustin, do you remember that?
Oh yeah.
Like, surely you know exactly who I'm talking about as someone who would have told you the same thing, like, hey, man, don't know about this offense. And I remember, like, uh-oh. And because I had been hyping Gilbert up so much. So we reported all to the beginning of the season that the offense had really been dominated by the defense and just wasn't in any kind of a rhythm. And all these years later, like, even this past week, I had somebody say, you guys had these awful practice reports in 2010 where y'all were hyping up Garrett Gilbert. It's like, no, that's not actually what happened. Like, we discussed, like, Anwar, you've never seen a freakout. And Jason, do you remember what it was like when there was an oh shit moment in the middle of the summer when people were questioning why Texas State would beat Texas in a 7-on-7 practice.
Well, yeah, that was the real eye-opener when Texas State beat them. And I mean, some people try to downplay it. And, of course, in hindsight, that was a pretty big development. We should have kept
close attention. It was a pretty big red flag.
Yeah. Well, you know, I always say with these practice reports, no matter what we report, we could report 9 things that look average or below average and then say, but Keontae Ingram ran the ball really well, and then people are going to accuse us of sunshine pumping and overhyping things. They're only going
to be too accurate sometimes in your reporting. Anwar reports the fucking Tyrone Swoops story exactly right.
I still get shit about it.
Exactly as it happened in the moment, and like sometimes your info can be too good, like you know. And so yeah, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. The point is the Texas football team's like in their own little bubble world now. And, you know, I think people will even ask it now, like, who's looking good? It's like, man, they're in the middle of like hardcore offseason workouts for, you know, second week now. You know, like this is where they are going to – this is where the cake gets put in the oven. And, you know, it will be, you know – I mean, spring football starts in less than a month, so we're not that far away from having something to legitimately talk about and to report on. But for the next couple of weeks, I think things, you know, be a whole lot of Sam Ellinger's really taking control of offseason workouts, and the players are feeding off of his alpha maleness. Like, you know, like it's going to be a whole lot of that if you ask, because that's like, you know, without even knowing what someone would say, if we ask them, you can kind of get an idea of what's probably happening behind the scenes. Alex, any idea what we should do for our crackheads that won't be able to contain themselves? It might be that recruiting will be enough to like feed that hunger. But damn it, people want their updates.
Well, I mean, I just say the updates about real, the updates about what? They're just doing conditioning.
Yancey McKnight shaved off 2/10 of a 40 time because he's a magician.
We just need to keep our ears to the ground and bring the information that they need. I mean, I remember when I first joined Orange Bloods in like what 2004. When was Paraloo? 2004.
Class of 2005. His recruitment.
So I've been on the board since then. Certainly not, I haven't worked there since then. But, I mean, I've seen how this sort of these 7-on-7s have changed. I mean, I remember even, you know, after I'd gotten on Orange Bloods, and it was probably Colt McCoy's junior year at Texas. I'd get them all, catch them. You're much better remembering what year's which. But I think it was Colt's junior year at Texas. And even that year, I wasn't in the media. I wasn't doing anything. I was like playing in a rock band and had some friends that knew like people around the football program. And I would just go in and I would watch 7-on-7s up in the bubble. You know, it was like, it was just different back then. I wouldn't be surprised if back then there were people from, you know, all the different sites that were, you know, if not allowed in there, just like kind of.
I used to watch it with John Bianco. Like I stood next to Bianco and would watch 7-on-7 workouts.
And it's just, how is that? It would be super cool if we were allowed that sort of availability again, because it would give us the opportunity. Mac Brown, you know, I think.
Nope.
Jordan Shipley.
Nope.
Wasn't it the Shipley thing?
It's Colt McCoy.
Why did he kill it?
In the summer of 2006, man, you'd have to understand in 2005, it was a party out there at the 7-on-7s. I mean, there'd be nights when they did scrimmage Texas State, there would be nights where there'd be 300 people out there and there'd be music playing. Like it was an event. In 2006, there was a quarterback battle between Colt and Jevon Snead. And we were going out there and reporting on 7-on-7. Like we had been every year that Orange Bloods had been in existence. I mean, hell, it used to be like Bianco occasionally could like set up an interview with you after the event was over. Like, you know, he was out there,
which is so wild because it's not a school sanction. It's supposed to be voluntary. It's not like a school event. That's why I always want
there to make sure like agents weren't doing, you know what I mean? Like it's so unlegislated that I think he was just making sure that nothing of that, cause it was, it wasn't until Colt McCoy bitched about us being there in the 2006 workouts that they nixed it. It was Colt McCoy. And, you know, look, he he led him to a national championship game. So he's got enough juice that everybody will listen to this podcast and go, oh, Colt was within his rights and it was the best move that could ever be made. But, you know, like Texas won a national championship in 2005 and practices were open and nobody cared, you know, and we had really good information, you know, like I've never been closer to a football team. And this is probably why they closed it down than in 2005, because you could go to those practices and chat up Justin Blaylock or somebody like that and just be like, hey, man, what's the vibe? And I, you know, I ended up writing a book in 2008 and had some great stuff from 2005. And then Colt just, he killed it. He complained. He got it shut down. And 13 years later, it's never been to open back up, despite the fact that schools all across the country, you know, technically do what they're supposed to do and not have those things monitored and legislated because they're not supposed to be.
Well, let me ask you this, Cash, because this is something here's the other thing. And just for being, you know, being up there around campus and being, you know, being so you plugged in, talking to certain players and coaches and stuff like that. It seems like the 7-on-7 culture under Charlie Strong was non-existent. And I think that had more to do with the fact that it had just kind of gone a little bit dormant, and also that there wasn't a real alpha dog lead quarterback that was going to be going around firing people up, getting people out of their dorm room, saying, get your ass up. We're going to 7-on-7s. You know, we're going to go do all this stuff. And it wasn't something that was pushed by the coaching staff. And so I think that the mixture of having the Tyrone Swoopses of the world and the David Ashes and the Case McCoys, these guys aren't real fire up, you know, fire you up alpha male sort of leaders. Now, when Tom Herman comes in here, we have all the reporting from Onward that we consistently get from his sources that they don't put any stock in those damn 7-on-7s. And so I think with the fact that the culture of 7-on-7s in Texas is slowly kind of eroded from what it was, I think that maybe if there was a chance we could see it even come back to where we could even have the same sort of events to report on that you guys used to have back in 2005, 2006, I think it would take a guy like a Sam Ellinger going to coach and saying, coach, we need to get these things back going again, because I simply don't think that they exist in the same way that they did then. I think that the reporting now needs to come from sourcing about what's happening in just Yancey McKnight's offseason program, as opposed to what's happening with these volunteer organized after hours 7-on-7s that, you know, were a big part of the culture of Texas there towards the, you know, the middle of that first decade of the century.
And what's been explained to me, Ketch, as far as that goes, is that I think you can understand this portion of it. Coaches love to have control of their programs. And Tom Herman is a guy who definitely wants to have control of his program. That in the beginning stages, and he still is in the beginning stages, as he's trying to implement his culture, the last thing he wanted was guys working out on their own, doing their own thing, where he felt like he had to corral those guys, break a lot of, you know, the attitudes and things to that effect. So I just think that because of what he had to deal with in the beginning stages, and again, he's still in the beginning, there's only going into year three, that has a lot to do with him just not letting guys go off. Now, he loves Sam Ellinger so much, he might let Sam be one of those guys who says, okay, I trust you enough to do it so you can do it, but you're going to have to report back to me and let me know everything that went on. But it just won't be the guy taking the initiative, quote unquote, and knocking on doors, as you guys say, and then getting guys out to work out. I just don't think that's what Tom Herman will allow, just because I think he wants to be the guy that everyone answers to, and I don't think he wants the different sects forming within the team.
Well, it's interesting because I think Alex makes, you know, it's funny, in a bigger conversation that we've somehow morphed into that I think is actually really interesting, even if it wasn't scheduled to be discussed. You know, the way that typically worked back in the day was that, you know, they shut down the practice fields. Now, they probably still give the quarterbacks and guys like that keys if and when they need them. But this culture that's dead, it kind of reminds me of the scene that they've been promoing in True Detective where, you know, Detective Roland says, This town died, and Dustin, you know what I'm talking about, because I know you watch True Detective. And then Detective Hayes says, no, it was murdered. I mean, the culture at Texas football was murdered. Like, it really was. And it was a long murder. It lasted almost the course of a decade. But yeah, the culture that existed when Vince Young handed the keys to Colt McCoy died, because if you think about it, Colt didn't really have anybody to – he probably thought he was handing the keys over to Garrett Gilbert and probably tried to prepare Garrett Gilbert to be that guy, and then Garrett Gilbert wasn't that guy, and then it slowly died after that, because it used to be that the quarterbacks had the keys to the entire practice facility, and nothing started and nothing happened unless the quarterback made it happen, because he had the keys. So the quarterback orchestrated everything. I remember before Colt McCoy was – the legend of Colt McCoy began in those summer workouts. And he beat Jevin Snead really and truly in the offseason without the coaches watching. He showed up to practice in August, and it was like, oh, so you're the dude. And it's like, yeah, no, we figured this out back in July. But, yeah, in August, I'm officially the dude. The decision's been made. You don't have to do anything, Greg Davis. And – you know, I remember reading in an old episode of Dave Campbell's Texas Football, a story about Colt McCoy, where he would go and pick up Brandon Collins. And you know, I don't know if Brandon Collins was lazy. I don't know if Brandon Collins just didn't have a ride. But Brandon Collins had a reputation for being the guy that they couldn't get his ass to practice. So Colt just every day went and picked his ass up. Like, you are going to practice. I'm here. Get in the car. And, you know, when Herman talks about, like, an alpha male – like, that's what it looks like in execution. It's not just about, you know, on game days getting guys huddled up and doing the Drew Brees chants or anything like that. It's not about acting a certain way in a game. It's about every day being that guy. And I do think they finally have it. I'm curious to see I'm curious to see what Sam does with the comfort of being able to just flex his own muscles, because this is his team. It is. Like, it's Tom Herman's team, but this is Sam Ellinger's team. He speaks for it. He spoke for it on the podium when he said Texas football is back, and everybody ate that shit up. So, like, I'm curious to see if Tom Herman – because it makes sense, Anwar, when you talk about what Herman was dealing with. Like, the last thing he wanted in his new world at Texas football was to have the wrong kids taking control of the team. Right? Like,
yes,
he wants the guys with his visions of ideology to be the guys that lead. Even if it takes a couple of years to get there, he doesn't want the wrong guys leading his team. But now he's got his guy. And I would say, because the only way I've ever seen it happen is this way: championship teams are made when coaches can turn the reins over to their players. And at that point, the culture's embedded enough that you could trust your players to take the reins and go with it in a really constructive and positive way. That's what happened in 2005. Like, that team became a national championship team on its own, practicing on its own in the offseason. That's where the real belief came from. You can talk to the players about it today. Marcus Myers does a podcast on the Yak. He's talked about those workouts. I wonder if Texas football is back to a place, Anwar, where Tom Herman can give the reins over to his players, because they're now his players, and the trust is so much more established than it would have been each of the last 2 years.
It's fascinating. You know, again, that'll be something I'll have to ask about. It's interesting. The last war room, I kind of reported who was the guys in the leadership council, and it was Sam Ellinger, Zach Shackelford, Devin Duvernay, Colin Johnson, Malcolm Roach, and Brandon Jones. Well, the only underclassman in there was Sam Ellinger, and that's so far. That's the only underclassman. He may add more as the months go along and more guys develop, but it's clear. Look, Ketch, I think you can agree. If anybody else gets on that Sugar Bowl stage and says, "We're back," Tom Herman is tackling that guy on stage. Right? If there was anybody else, if it was Colin Johnson who's like yelled, "We're back," or anybody else, I don't think he would have been okay with it. But even when I asked him about it afterwards, I'm like, he couldn't have liked that much. He's like, no. But he never scolded a guy. He let it go and let it ride, because that's his dude. Because we've always talked about, like, when Tom Herman looks at Sam Ellinger, he sees himself, because that's what he's like, that's the young guy. I was going to be the young stud, and it's a mirror image. So I think if Tom Herman did decide that he was going to loosen up the reins and allow more workouts and allow more 7-on-7 things that are outside of his parameters. Because even, look, Yancey McKnight clearly answers to Tom Herman. Like, there's no ifs, ands, or buts that he doesn't, because Tom Herman wouldn't be able to recite all those stats about the weight room gains every year if it wasn't for Yancey McKnight's full reporting. So we know that Tom likes that control, and it's worked for him. He can't knock the results. But if he did loosen it up a little bit, I think it would be solely because of his trust in Sam more so than anything else.
I wonder how much of this also has to do with agents. That, you know, in 2019, Alex, what do you think? In 2019, in the summer, where if you've got a team full of potential NFL prospects, and it's the type of event that Texas can't monitor officially, like, right, the whole way that Texas has approached this is like, look, you can go out and they had Texas, as far as I can remember, doesn't officially have a rule that says you can't go cover summer practices. However, if you do, just don't expect to be credentialed in the fall. And I'm like, yeah. It's an unofficial, don't do that because there are consequences, but we ain't stopping you from doing it. I do wonder in 2019, and if the answer is, yeah, man, they're really worried about this, I can't defend against this. In 2005, it wasn't really an agent world.
It was an agent who took me to practice.
Back in 2005?
Yeah, it was an agent.
So they were there, but never felt like they were there, I guess, because I went to them all the time and never noticed, never had anybody say, hey, who's that guy? Oh, he's an agent. Like, I just, you know, I was never aware, and I was there all the time. Even on nights when there weren't anybody else there, there were nights that I would be there. In 2019, you hear so much about agents being around campus and agents at hotels and things like that, that, yeah, they probably would be a lot at practice, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, the guy that took me, he's been my friend for a long time. But the guy that took me, like, those times when I see Colt up there, he actually represents one of the kids coming out this year for the Longhorns. So, yeah, I think it would definitely be a problem. And now, especially that you have, you know, you have, I mean, how much of a problem it would be, I'm not exactly sure, because, you know, I can understand from a compliance standpoint why the university would shy away from it, because it just seems like you're wading into a territory there where kids can get themselves in a lot of trouble real quickly. But with that being said, the guys who are really focused in on Texas right now, and I don't want to use any of their names because I don't want to put them in a negative light, because, you know, it seems like we're talking about these agents being around as something that could be bad. And while technically it could be a nightmare from a compliance standpoint, it is perfectly legal for agents to have contact with these players. It's perfectly legal for them to speak to them about their services. It's perfectly legal for them to develop relationships with them. What's not legal is for them to try to give, or for any player to accept any unpermissible benefits, or for that player to sign into any sort of agreement with that agent for risk of losing their remaining eligibility and getting the school in big trouble. So there is that risk. But as far as the agents being there, or agents being around, I think if you're running a big program these days, Ketch, I think you kind of got to be okay with the fact that, you know, I'll just, like, say one of the biggest ones. They say, like, David Mulligetta from Athletes First, he will have talked to Charles Omenihu by the time it's August before his senior year. That's the kind of stuff that's just gonna happen. And if you fancy yourself as a big time program that's gonna develop NFL players, there's certain sausage making processes that sort of go along with being that kind of factory.
True words have probably never been spoken. Let's jump into the recruiting side of things. I released my 2020 Lone Star recruiting list earlier this week. It's been quite active on that thread. It's always interesting for me to go through that process in after these kids' junior seasons have ended, because there's so much more intel available, because you've got 12 months of camps and various events that they would have went to, where you're going to pick up, you know, some one-on-one reps against elite level guys and things like that. You're going to get reports, and they'll have gone to Texas's camp and Texas A&M camps. And so you just have so much information that you can use to look at these guys over. But it is always interesting to see, like, guys that I like a lot, versus guys that are ranked differently by Rivals, which are ranked differently than 24/7. It feels like towards the end of the year, there's a consensus almost across the board on 99% of the guys, but 12 months out, there's less of a consensus, even though there's probably 75% consensus. But there are a number of guys that Texas is like super high on that aren't rated really, really high in anybody's rankings, except maybe now mine or a couple of other strays, but like they're still a little bit behind on the national ranking. Jason, I'll just throw it to you. It is a big event coming up this weekend. Based on the big, let's start with the biggest names coming to town, because we could talk about the totality of how many kids are going to have, because it sounds like volume wise, it's going to be pretty enormous and relatively speaking, you know, whereas they'll have events later in the year where the numbers will be smaller. This is going to be 2021, 2020, 2022.
Yeah. There'll be some 2022 guys there. A couple of them, you know, if you're asking me the biggest names that are coming in, I think it's a graduate transfer and a junior college offensive lineman. That's kind of been lost in the shuffle that Texas is bringing in R.J. Proctor, the graduate transfer from Virginia. Alex and I have written, both of us have written quite a bit about him. He'll be in on an official visit. And then Willie Tyler, JUCO guy out of Iowa Western Community College. He's been very much under the radar. I've reported on him back in December and January. Texas was just talking to him. He's now coming in on an official visit. So to me, those are the big, you're talking immediate needs. Those are the two big ones. But from a junior day perspective, yeah, they're going to have, you know, it's interesting. There's going to be a lot of players coming in. Okay. This list seems like every time I update it, by the time I add a new name, more new names are popping up on Twitter and things. There's some really, really good players. There's some players who I think the staff is bringing in just to kind of get to know them, just to evaluate them, see them in person in case things, you know, in case these guys do develop the way they think it's possible, you know, that way you've had them in, you're not playing catch up on them. But, you know, these guys that are being brought in don't have offers from anybody, much less Texas, but they're clearly on the staff's radar from an evaluation perspective. So, some of the big names that Texas is bringing in, you start with a guy like in the 2020 class. And a little sidebar, I mean, the 2019 class just signed, a week and a day ago? And that feels to me like it was 2 months ago. I mean, those guys are so far off. They're on the back burner now. I don't even think they're on the burner anymore. They're off the range at this point. So 2020 class is where it's at, man. So they're going to bring in guys like Mookie Cooper, the athlete slash running back slash wide receiver out of St. Louis Trinity Catholic. This will be his third unofficial visit to Texas in the last year. So if that doesn't tell you how strong his interest is, I don't know what you're looking at. Now, he did visit Georgia recently, but listen, third time to be in Austin. That one to me looks really good. He's actually coming down with two teammates, one of which is Texas signee Marcus Washington, the receiver that signed with Texas in the 2019 class. He'll be coming in with Mookie Cooper. So guys like him, Jason Harris, I reported, I think it was Monday I reported on Jason Harris or Sunday. He's a defensive end out of Gilbert, Arizona, 6'8", 220 pounds. Guy's got offers from everybody. He's also a highly coveted basketball prospect. He's coming in. Princely Umanmielen, the young man out of Manor, the defensive end. This will be his fourth visit.
You did pretty good with that. Dude,
I don't know that I said it right, but let's just go with that, man.
That's what I'm saying. Say it again.
Human kneeling. I'm just going with that until he tells me otherwise. So, but he's come. It's his fourth visit in five. I think it's in the last 5 weeks. This will be his fourth time on campus, if I'm not mistaken. So, again, man, you know, read the tea leaves. He tells me, hey, I like Texas. I like Oklahoma. He likes Arizona. He wants to take his time. All right, dude, I get it. You live in Manor. It's easy to get to Austin. He told me technically he lives in Austin, but goes to Manor High School. But I get it. It's easy to get there. But you've also shown up four times. Every time they've had guys on campus, you've been there. So
What's her name? That's what it is.
Yeah. So Bryson Washington, the young man from Houston King High School, Rivals 100 safety. He'll be back. Dwight McLeathern, DB. He's going to be there. I mean, a lot of guys with offers who will be in, you know, and it's funny. The fans are like, whoa, that's a good list. But where's the guy like Zach Evans? Where's Prince Dorba? Where's Chad Lindbergh?
There are a lot of big timers not on the list.
But you got to remember, listen, I said that they also had a kind of an elite junior day two and a half weeks ago, when it was that Oklahoma basketball game, when Zach Evans and Jack Lindbergh and Prince Dorba and all those guys were there, remember? So this to me, that first one was kind of more under the radar in terms of it being labeled a junior day and it was considered an elite day. But those guys that attended that first junior day aren't coming back for this one, except for Bryson Washington, he's coming back with part of the Fast 7-on-7 team. But yeah, don't get too hung up on who's not coming in, because they had a really successful, call it a junior day, if you will, 3 weeks ago, where it was a smaller group. It was an elite group of players. I mean, Vernon Broughton was there. I mentioned Bryson Washington. Jace McClellan was there. Hudson Card. Of course, Zach Evans was there. They got a lot more one-on-one time with those guys at that one 3 weeks ago than they will at this one coming up, when they're going to have, who knows, probably 40 or 50 kids there, I would guess. So I think Texas played this perfectly. So my advice is, don't worry about the guys who aren't coming to this one, because most of them were in town as recently as 3 weeks ago, and it was probably a more productive visit then than it would be this weekend. I tell you the thing that's most interesting to me, Hudson Card is not going to be there, the quarterback commitment. Logan Parr is not going to be there, the offensive line commitment. And Jake Majors, I need to follow up with him, but as of Monday, he told me he didn't think he was going to be there. So none of the three Texas commitments are coming. And this is truly, looks like it's a weekend that's going to be more catered to
tier two.
No, I don't want to say tier two, man, because there are some really good players. I mean,
well, like Bryson Washington's coming, but this isn't really his event, right? Like, he was
And Mookie's coming in. Listen, Mookie Cooper out of St. Louis, you bring him in just whenever the hell you can. You know, if Mookie wants to come in from St. Louis, you don't ever tell him no. There are a couple really good players from Oklahoma coming down, including a cornerback, Miles Slusher, who has a Texas offer. I mean, listen, man, you let that guy come in whenever you can. That's a long drive for him. But, you know, I guess tier two is a safe way to say it, but a fair way to say it. But there are some really good players still coming in. And then I didn't talk about 2021. 2021, there's some big-time players coming in. You know, those guys are a long way from really hitting the nitty-gritty. But, you know, Shadrick Banks, the wide receiver from North Shore, everybody saw him in the state championship. Latrell Neville, one of the top receivers in the country. Tommy Brockermeyer, the offensive lineman, of course, Texas legacy, Hayden Connor. So really good players in the 2021 class coming in. From the 2020 class, not as star-studded as maybe what we're traditionally used to seeing in junior days, minus, you know, three or four guys.
You know, it's interesting, Jason, if we just quickly go down I think the most interesting 2020 guys, Bryson Washington's pretty big time, right? I mean, sure. And I've got him number 5 on the LSR. I think he is number 61 nationally right now. So, I mean, this is a guy who's number 5 in the state, according to Rivals as well. And he will be in 5-star level discussions, especially if he's a guy that goes out and performs really well in all of the various camps and things that will take place in the next 5-6 months. That's a big one that he's coming back, even though he's coming back with his crew, he's still coming back. And he is a guy that I think most people think is a bit of a Texas lean right now. So, you know, when I heard you say he was, you know, here a couple of weeks ago and is coming back with his group, even though, you know, I think that's a good sign.
Yeah. And in fact, I put our Rivals forecast. I probably should have done it a long time ago. I didn't realize I hadn't. I put in my Rivals forecast for Bryson Washington to go to Texas. I did the same with Princey Umanmielen this week. I mean, both those guys, again, man, it's not rocket science. Anytime a guy's spent, and you've actually broken this down, catching, I remember you wrote about it a couple years ago in one of your 10 thoughts, but
get him on campus 6 times.
That's right, 6 times. And you know what? Princely Umanmielen's going to probably hit that number before the end of February or March. So, you know, Bryson Washington, I mean, in talking to him, you know, he likes Oklahoma. He went to A&M recently. But I just get a different vibe when I talk to him. And I mentioned Texas, and Texas has really made him a priority. He's planning on deciding this summer. He's kind of told me he's flexible on that though. He could he possibly push it back. I don't see that happening. I mean, bottom line, if I'm placing a bet, I'm putting it on Texas, and I feel pretty comfortable about that pick.
Hey, Anwar, you and I were randomly having a conversation about one of the kids coming in to town this weekend. It's a weird year because as it currently stands, my number one linebacker in the state is a kid named Brennan Scott from Dallas Bishop Dunn, who's scheduled to be in town this weekend. But it's a weird
he's
year.
He's a maybe, just to clarify, Ketch. He's told me he's a maybe. Yeah, he was a maybe as of Tuesday, I believe. So.
All right. Well, then maybe I shouldn't bring it up, but whatever. No, but I was just saying it's a weird year because some years in recruiting, some positions are like, I think this is a pretty damn good year for offensive linemen. This is a year where I think there's at least 7 or 8 in the top 30, whereas it's not a big year for linebackers. And yet Brennan Scott, a guy who's a tentative for this list, might be the only 4-star linebacker prospect that I have rated. It is, as far as I can see. But some people like him more than that. There are guys on my list that will go up in the coming months. That was just an interesting name for random reasons. You and I just happened to be talking about that kid this week.
And then, I talked to someone and they told me they thought, Brennan Scott's probably the best linebacker in the state of Texas. And, obviously on the radar and stuff like that. But when I asked them, was talking a little bit further, I was like, well, who's the guy you love? Like, who is what you would consider the must get? Like, if you could just sell your mom for this guy, who would it be? And it was Justin Flo. And
no-brainer, though.
Yeah, it is a no-brainer. But I mean, the dude, Alex, I don't know if you've seen this guy's film, and I know you love to watch him.
I haven't seen him. I don't know anything about
just
him.
Look up Justin Flo, FLOWE, as a linebacker outside of Upland, California. Just start watching that because, oh my God. I admit, there's people on our board, Ketch, who they're definitely, follow recruiting a lot heavier than I do. This is for fun for me, right? Because like basketball, like I can just give Shaka shit the entire time because I don't have to cover it. So it just is what it is. Like I can piggyback on recruiting and watching and keep up with it because, I don't have to cover it. It just kind of is what it is and do it for fun. But outside of Brennan Scott, I mean, everybody would be all chips in on Justin, but that's the other name. That
Justin Flo's ridiculous. You can tell just watching just starting out the huddle tape.
A lot of people think he might be the best linebacker to come out in the last 10 years. I mean, he's that good. And he likes Texas. He likes Texas. So
what? He's a California kid.
Yeah. And seriously.
Got a pipeline going so far.
Mm-hmm. All bets are off. Like I see the
Do they just come into these games? They say, you know what? We're going to do this game, guys. We're going to get out there. We're going to knock them in their ass, but let's just not block this fucking monster. What the hell is this? It's like they don't even try to block him.
Well, would you try to block him back in your old Westlake O-line days?
I'd say don't put me on that guy.
Hey, and he's got a younger brother who's a year younger who's really damn good too. So, whoever gets Justin, man, you're setting yourself up pretty nicely for the next couple of years. I saw him at the Rivals 5-star challenge last year. And I knew the name. He wasn't really on my radar, but I'd heard even last year as a junior, like, hey, he's the best linebacker in the country. At the Rivals 5-star challenge, you're not supposed to – you're not wearing pads. It's minimal contact. He knocked a couple people out of the 5-star challenge, including Zachary Evans, just because he was being a little overly physical.
I like him.
Yeah, at the 5-star challenge, he was being a little too physical and knocked a couple guys out of the event. So,
his top three would appear to be, well, look, I'm looking at an update from a week ago from Adam Gorney and the Rivals Network. Did you? I might have just missed this last week. Did you see this, Jason?
He wrote one. It was a couple weeks ago. I don't remember seeing one last week.
It was 10 days ago. So it's probably one, but
talks about, he wants to visit. He is going to visit Texas. Yeah,
Oklahoma, Texas, and Clemson were the three schools that in the update with Adam Gorney that he spoke most about. He spoke exclusively about, he didn't mention, he said those three teams, along with Alabama, USC, and Oregon, are recruiting him the hardest. But the only three he mentioned were Texas, Clemson, and Oklahoma. Oklahoma is going after his brother probably the hardest. but he says he wore a Texas jacket to the premium sports tournament that weekend. Yeah, I remember this now. And he says
Texas did offer his brother just last week. So I think after that came out, they offered his brother. So
on where his quote was, I like Coach Herman. I really like him. He's a good coach, and I could see myself playing for him. They've been recruiting me really, really hard. They've really been on my tail recruiting me, really. So there's a lot of reallys in there.
A lot of really. Yeah, and you can't deny, and I think Dustin's touched on this too, you can't deny the you know, they've tapped into that California market. I mean, they got the Brew McCoy, they've got Colin Johnson, you know, so it's not
Gabriel Floyd.
Gabriel Floyd. So yeah, it's not just like people are just like, man, who's gonna go all the way down to Texas? It's kind of like, okay, you once the word starts spreading, especially amongst the elite athletes, like, hey, this is a really good program, it gives you more of a program and get a more of a chance with a guy like that.
Dustin, this is music to Texas fans' ears, because when you were, you know, still sitting on Santa Claus's knee at the mall back in the 90s, Texas
he still does that, catch.
I'm convinced that the one reason he might have a kid is so that he can, you know, have an alibi for that whole Santa thing that he does. You know, Bryant Westbrook, Ricky Williams. I mean, there were guys, they're just, there was a lot of, yeah.
It was successful guys they brought in too.
And then Texas, when Mac showed up, were all in on California. They were going after DJ Williams. They were going after, who was the Kalen Jakes, I think, was the kid from California.
Wow. That's a name
that they signed. You know, and then they just stopped. They just stopped. And unless a California kid practically begged them to recruit them, you know, I mean, a kid from California would have to pay for his trip to Austin, drop down to a knee and beg Mac Brown, and then Mac Brown might offer him. California is so unprotected. It is so, I mean, USC is the only school they could probably make a claim to it being their territory, and they are so damaged right now and wounded. And so I think one of the best things that Tom Herman has done as a recruiter is to absolutely seemingly understand what California is for Texas, potentially, maybe more so than anybody has since Mac in his very earliest days. But maybe if we're being honest, because Mac quit, you might have to go back to John Makovic, who was like, we're putting up a flag of the University of Texas in every Southern California city where there are high school football players to be found. And it gave Texas a Heisman Trophy winner. Like, you know, they weren't able to get Ricky Williams because he was the first California player they recruited. They were able to get Ricky Williams because they had established a pattern, and he was, and Tom Herman started to do that, which will make it easier when they go after a kid like Justin Flo.
Yeah, it's smart. It's something that, you know, this week I looked back at a column I wrote in 2013, just kind of like, hey, why isn't Texas recruiting California more than it is? Because, you know, there's a lot of things in terms of like the culture and the cities and, you know, the weather, and it's a much shorter trip than a guy going to the Southeast or to Florida or to Big Ten country or something else like that. Like you said, Ketch, it's unprotected. You know, it's normally over the last 7, 8, 9 years, it's been, okay, USC gets who they want for the most part. UCLA has been very up and down. Oregon's been very up and down. Washington's never really been a big recruiting presence. Colorado's been a mess. The Arizona schools have kind of been a mess. And you've just got California sitting out there. And then every year it's like, you know, you'd see Oklahoma, Michigan, Notre Dame, Nebraska grab at least one or two really good guys out of that state every single year. And they were really the only big dogs outside of the Pac-12 region recruiting that area. And then you started to see Alabama kind of get in there a little more. But really it was mostly just those schools. And there's no better time than now to get out there if you're Texas and take advantage of those relationships that you have and really aggressively recruit that area, because I think it's never been more up for grabs. I mean, we know that Chip Kelly, if he doesn't have Willie Lyles doing it, doesn't like recruiting. I mean, their class this year was an absolute disaster. I mean, Oregon had the best class in the Pac-12. I mean, and even they just, you know, didn't get a ton of guys out of California. USC is surprisingly down in recruiting right now. And a lot of those other Pac-12 programs really don't even have a pulse in recruiting. They're not going to go head-to-head with a Texas or an Oklahoma or a Notre Dame in that region. and beat those schools. So I thought it was really interesting. I went back, you know, when I originally did that story in 2013, I basically just kind of counted how many guys would leave the state, how many guys would leave the region, all of those things. And the numbers are much bigger now than they were back then. And if you look most recently over the last four recruiting classes, it's averaged on average 18 and a half guys leave the state. But even more important is that on average of those top 30 guys, 8.5 guys leave the Pac-12 region. So that means that almost one third of the top 30 prospects in that state, which for California, that's probably 30 Rivals 250 members, because that state's loaded every single year. Almost one third of those guys are leaving the West Coast or leaving the Pac-12 region to go to Texas or Oklahoma or Michigan. And now you're starting to see schools for the first time really get into there. Like Clemson got a big name guy out of there recently. South Carolina even went to California and got a quarterback out of there. So, yeah, there's no better time than now for Texas to really continue to aggressively recruit that region. I think it's been a smart move by Tom Herman. Obviously, he knows the area, having played football out there and gone to school. But this is a state that every single year, you know, it averages 4.5, 5 stars for the last 4 years. I mean, every year there's going to be a Justin Flo or a Brew McCoy. I mean, there are always going to be some big time guys that come out of that state. And I mean, just this last class, 24 of the top 30 guys left California. So that means USC and UCLA and Cal and all those, Stanford, I mean, they weren't cleaning up in the state of California. And there is a way more talent there than some of the other surrounding states. So I think it's something we're going to see Texas continue to do even more. And I think that we could look back at just, you know, how big of it was to get Brew McCoy. That's a 5-star from Matter Day that left California to go to Texas. You hardly ever see that type of prospect from that type of program leave the state of California and go somewhere else. And I think that that's the kind of thing that could, you know, really raise some eyebrows with other big time recruits in that state when they see a guy of that caliber from that type of program be willing to leave California and go play somewhere else.
Anwar, you know what it means? They need Brew McCoy to be really good, because it'll be the Brew McCoy example moving forward. If he's really happy and he kicks ass, the door would seemingly be open. If he's, for any reason, would ever be unhappy and it didn't work out and he left, you know, other schools would look at that and go, don't leave to go to Texas. So he's an important player in this program beyond the obvious reasons. If he were to tear it up this year, you'd be able to go to a Justin Flo and be able to say, honestly, and like, with an example to show him, come here next year, you're leading our defense. In 3 years, you're in the NFL, just like Brew McCoy, who you know, and who would also be your teammate. You wouldn't be alone.
And here's the thing. Like, Catch, and Jason can attest to this, because we both kind of talked to people who were close to the situation. Like, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jason, but when Brew got to USC, he saw things within that 2-week span where he just said, I got to get the hell out of here. Like, this is definitely not a program I can be a part of. And he saw enough of little things. And I want to get into all the details, because I want someone to post on the board and get all pissy and stuff like that. But I think Jason can attest to, there was enough little things that he saw and saw a lot of deficiencies within that USC program that he says no. So if that guy who's a 5-star says, nah, I'm good, and then he starts getting on the phone and starts talking to the other guys and say, listen, you don't want to mess with USC, because when I was there, dude, it was so bad, I was trying to get out like a week later, and I finally was able to get out of there. So the Brew McCoy example, how things pan out for him and how well he likes it here, will definitely give him advantage recruiting-wise.
And don't sleep on Gabe Floyd's influence as well.
Sure.
I mean, he's kind of been a ringleader and ambassador for the recruiting class. And he got both those guys. People forget DeGabriel Floyd was committed to USC as well. So, I mean, Texas, you know, you say they stole two players right out from USC's nose.
USC really wanted him. They had a huge need at linebacker.
Well, and they stayed on him. You know, when he committed to Texas, they tried to stay on him, but he never really gave them a second look. But you know, the California thing makes sense. I mean, when, and it, it spills over to Arizona too, partly because Tim Beck's contacts out there. And, you know, when I talked to Jake Smith and his family, one of the things they said, Dustin, and you touched on it, was it just feels culturally the same. And Jake even told me, hell, even the weather is the same. But, you know, when I went out there and visited Jake at his school, I tell you, first off, Scottsdale's a pretty badass area. I could see myself retiring there someday. But it does kind of have a similar feel with just kind of Austin and even the suburb areas of Austin and the way it's growing and things are new. I mean, it, I don't know. I can't put it into words, but what Jake Smith and his family told me, I kind of sensed the same thing. It just has a similar feel with Austin and that kind of Phoenix and surrounding areas. So you understand why those kids are comfortable when they get to Austin. And you even have, yet you mentioned Bryant Westbrook. Hell, he's a coach in the Phoenix area. And he, Keely Ringo, the five-star quarterback, that's his position coach. It's just, it's a perfect storm for Texas to recruit California and Arizona. And it's really no wonder they're having success. But again, like you said, hey, if Brew McCoy, Gabe Floyd, if those guys do well and have success, then that could really open the floodgates. One other final note, while y'all were talking, I was texting with Brandon Scott. He is not coming to Austin this weekend. So
let's just edit that thing out of the podcast.
Cut this whole damn segment out.
Real quick, as it relates to the junior day, or, well, just the event this weekend, because
I think we can call it a junior day at this point, yeah.
But it's, you know, more than that. RJ Proctor, I guess, is, you mentioned it, the biggest visitors are probably, you know, the RJ Proctors of the non-2020 juniors necessarily. Let's talk about that a little bit, Jason. Go for it.
RJ Proctor will certainly be the biggest visitor.
Yeah. Well,
as far as size.
Look at it. Yeah, there's not a lot of offensive linemen, so you're probably right. Well, I don't know, man. Some of those 2021 dudes, man, Hayden Connor.
Are over 330 pounds?
Not 330, but those are some big boys. Hayden Connor, he towers over me when I talk to him. But, you know, Proctor coming in, and I'll have a full write-up on him in the war room tonight. But, he likes Texas a lot, but it's tough competition for Texas, man. He's going to visit, of course, Texas this weekend. And then the first weekend of March – I don't have my notes in front of me, so I'm going off of memory. But first weekend of March, it's Ohio State. The following weekend, he goes to Oklahoma. Then he takes a weekend off, I'm presuming for spring break. And then he goes to Florida State. And his fifth official visit, this one just doesn't quite figure in as I don't understand it, but he's going to University of Houston. He wants to maybe make a decision literally like the night he gets back from that Houston visit, which would be, I think, the last weekend of March. So, you know, you're battling Ohio State, Oklahoma, Florida State, Houston, if they can blow him away. So tough sledding, but man, he really likes Texas's depth chart. He's coming from Virginia, so UVA. So he's obviously strong academically. He likes Texas's academics. He really likes Herb Hand. And I want to put this part in the war room, and I kind of teased it a little bit in my Q&A. I tell you one thing that I said, Texas kind of has a bit of an ace up its sleeve. His offensive line coach at Virginia, and I can't think of his name. I'll have to look it up when I write about it. But he actually took a clinic under Herb Hand a couple years ago. So he and Herb Hand have been communicating. They know each other. They're friendly. And the techniques that RJ Proctor learned at Virginia over the last like 18 months. He said his offensive line coach at Virginia just started using these about a year and a half ago, were techniques that the coach learned from Herb Hand. So he said, hey, if I go to Texas, man, it's a lot of the same verbiage. It's a lot of the same, you know, just same techniques from play to play. It would make for a very smooth transition. To me, that's something Texas can really sell. Hey, man, if you go to Oklahoma, you go to Ohio State, you're going to have to learn a completely new system, completely new style of playing. You come here, it's a smooth transition. We got you on the biggest stage possible. We've got two guard spots open. He's an interior offensive lineman. Just makes a lot of sense, man. But there is a lot of competition. Texas will have to weather the storm with some of those other visits. But I do think Texas has a great shot with him coming in this weekend.
Anything else, Jason, from this upcoming weekend? Or should we transition into putting Dustin on the clock and just asking about basketball?
And I'm You know, I tell you what, I'll say one more, and then, guys, I've got to sign off in about 5 minutes, so I'll probably just disappear while Dustin's talking. But the other, you know, we didn't talk much about Willie Tyler, the JUCO offensive lineman out of Iowa Western. Very much an under-the-radar. You know what, Alex, I tell you what, you talk about the biggest. He won't. I don't think Proctor will be the biggest, because I think Willie Tyler is something like 6'7", 330, so he might be – he'll be the biggest guy on campus probably. But he's a very much under-the-radar offensive line prospect at Iowa Western. He's only taken one official visit. That was to Louisiana Tech. Doesn't have a lot of big-time schools chasing him, a lot of big-time offers. He said, you know, over the last few weeks, some new ones have started talking to him. But Texas has been talking to him for a couple months now. Jake Longy, the recruiting assistant, has been talking to him. Herb Hands talked to him a little bit. He did go see him, but most of the conversations have been with Jake Longy. So he's coming in this weekend. If Texas likes what they see enough to offer him this weekend, and I don't know that they will. I mean, 9 times out of 10, when a kid's brought in for an official visit, you think he's going to get an offer. But we saw late in the process of that 2019 class, Texas brought a couple JUCO guys in, or grad transfer guys even, in December, and ended up not offering them on their official visits, which is kind of unique. So we'll see. But if Texas offers Willie Tyler this weekend, he's a former defensive lineman, just moved to offense. So, you know, you got to figure he's pretty athletic. He's obviously got great size, bit of a developmental prospect, I think. But, you know, if Herb Hand thinks, hey, this guy, you know, he can work with this bit of clay, then in Herb Hand, I trust. But if Texas offers him, that young man may commit before he leaves Austin on Sunday. He told me there's a good chance if Texas offers him, he'll go ahead and commit. So don't sleep on Willie Tyler. We'll be tracking his visit very closely. He'll be in on an official visit as well.
Goodbye, Jason.
I'll have this for a little
bit. Okay. Dustin, I really can throw it to you. Basketball, baseball, it's about to be that weird little 6-week period for you where there's crossover daily with these sports. What do you want to talk about the most?
Topics that don't infuriate the message board members.
Oh, or make them stop listening to the podcast altogether.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So what's that?
Basketball.
No, I know. So I just didn't know. You and I had a conversation the last time we had lunch about this baseball team, and wasn't it? No, we were just, maybe we were just talking about it on Slack that, you know, this is gonna be an interesting team, because I think there will be but Texas fans seem to be smart about this. I've seen more Texas baseball fans that seem to be self-aware that this might not be a College World Series team, and that 2020 is maybe a more realistic target. So maybe this season's about try to be really good, compete well in the Big 12, you know, get to postseason baseball. But I haven't seen anybody who seems to be, you know, doing that Texas baseball thing where it's world, you know, it's College World Series or bust. It seems like most smart Texas baseball fans aren't riding that ride right now.
Yeah, they're not. I think they understand, especially, you know, after the news about David Hamilton, that there's going to be a lot of new faces that have to play prominent roles, you know, for this team. And it just, the pitching staff is so young and so inexperienced, and you combine that with the schedule and all those things, that I think most fans are taking the approach, as they should, that the hope for Texas would be you take your lumps in the non-conference, because when you're playing at Stanford and you're hosting LSU and you're going on the road to Louisiana Lafayette and you're playing 2 midweek games against Arkansas, and even Purdue was a team that went to the NCAA tournament last year, it's a tough non-conference schedule. I mean, there are definitely going to be some ups and downs through that ride. But I think the hope for Texas is you get into Big 12 play against a really good Big 12. I think it's going to be probably the second best conference in the country this year. That's a moment when you guys are starting to figure out some roles in terms of pitching. The maturity and the experience of some of your position players is showing. You've got the infield solidified. You've got a lot of things figured out, and really those pitchers are starting to kind of grow into their roles. And then at that point, you hope that Texas does, you know, what it did last year, which was it once it got all those pieces in place, it really started to take off at the right time. And of course, you know, there's going to be no Cody Clemens this year. But I think Texas hopes that collectively there's going to be a lot of guys that could improve to really help carry that load. You know, Austin Todd is a guy that really didn't play last year, and people forget that he was poised for a big sophomore season. In fact, I think some people thought he was going to be the best hitter on the team last year. I mean, he's back and he's fully healthy. You know, you bring back guys like Duke Ellis and DJ Petrinski, who are another year removed from making that jump from junior college player to college player. You know, you got Zach Zubia back, who had a full year under his belt. Mason Hibbler is back as a senior. So I think Texas is hoping that a lot of those guys that have some maturity and have some experience that are going to be in the lineup probably every day, those guys take a step forward to create a deeper lineup. Because people, I mean, some people forget last year's lineup, you know, there were a lot of times 7, 8, 9 were just outs. It was really, could Texas put enough guys on base in front of Cody Clemens, or could enough guys behind him pick him up when he's on base to generate enough runs? And then meanwhile, the pitching staff really came into its own down the stretch in Big 12 play and leading into the postseason. So I think that this group is more talented, but so much of that talent is young that it's going to take some time for those guys to really gain their footing against what could be the toughest schedule in the country. But you know, and one thing that helps Texas fans have a more realistic approach about this is because of last year. There's no weight on David Pierce's shoulders as it relates to the fan base, because he's got an Omaha trip. You know, he in his second year, which was supposed to be probably a rebuilding type year or just really getting established what Texas is going to be under him, they ended up exceeding expectations and going to the College World Series. So I really think that that's helped just this fan base have less anxiety about the baseball program and its direction, and be able to look at a roster and understand that, okay, we're going to have a lot of freshmen and redshirt freshmen and sophomores throw a ton of innings for this group. I mean, the one guy that returned with significant starting experience, Blair Henley, is the Saturday starter. I mean, Bryce Elder beat him out for the Friday job. So I think Texas fans do understand that with all those young arms, even though they're talented, against this schedule, it's going to be a roller coaster early on. But then the hope that for the third year in a row, David Pierce and those guys maximize what they have, because if they do, it could end up looking like in the Big 12 like it did last season.
You want to jump into a parting shot before we go, and we'll just go around the room?
Yeah, I'll touch on basketball a little bit. You know,
you don't have to.
Yeah, well, I feel like I kind of need to.
They can listen to Dropping Dimes.
it's just the Kansas State game was just another one of those moments where, you know, Shaka Smart had an opportunity to reel a bunch of people back in. You could feel it in that arena. There are people, as much as the vocal majority on our message board just is ready for another coach or something. You could feel in that arena that people wanted to believe in this basketball team because of what it had done against Baylor and West Virginia and, you know, Kansas, and that it was starting to play better. And just, it's like every time Texas gets to one of those moments under Shaka Smart, they just don't get the result they need. And on its own, the Kansas State loss, you would just say, hey, that's an Elite Eight team from last year that's really good, that played well. Yeah, shit happens. But when you're 14-11 and you've got losses at home to Radford and VCU and Providence, and you go on the road and lay an egg against Oklahoma State and Georgia, and the efficiency numbers tell you that this should be a 16, 17, maybe an 18 win basketball team, that just creates such a letdown vibe around the program. So Saturday's a must win game for them as it relates to the NCAA tournament. I don't think many Texas fans realize that college basketball as a whole sucks right now. The resumes of a lot of these teams across the country are not good. The Pac-12 might end up being a one bid league. So Texas, if it finishes 9-9 in the Big 12, which is still very realistic right now, I would be shocked if it doesn't get into the NCAA tournament. So for Texas fans, keep that in mind, that as up and down as this season has been and as frustrating as it's been, Texas is still in a pretty good position to make the NCAA tournament.
I was more impressed by Kansas State the other night than I was, you know, normally I watch a Texas basketball game and they lose and I, you know, I cringe, but I didn't really happen the other night. Like, I, you know what that felt like? It felt like they were playing Kansas and not Kansas State. Like, that was a good basketball team.
That's a really good basketball team. I'd be surprised if they're not back in the Elite Eight. And they played that Elite Eight game last year without Dean Wade. And I mean, just to win that many games in the row in the Big 12, I mean, they're very experienced. They were never once rattled. I mean, that was a really good basketball team. And yeah, on your own, you're thinking, yeah, Texas got beat by a better basketball team that played a, you know, an A-minus kind of game. That stuff's going to happen in the Big 12. But then when you add it to the bigger picture of the way this season's gone, it looks like another wasted opportunity.
Man, how different would the season look if they just beaten the teams they were supposed to beat?
Yeah.
They'd be like a 5 seed right now. Dustin, was that it? You went basketball parting shot? No rant. Because I'm about to give it to Alex.
Yeah, hand it to Alex. Let's get this rant out. I had a good Tyler Murray rant on my last.
You guys are propping me up too much, man. I'm just trying to think about some of the rant about today, and I just can't. I don't have anything that I'm angry about. No. No.
Nothing?
I feel a lot of love in the air. It's Valentine's Day.
What a goddamn podcast is this if you're not
So Alex, you're not going out tonight? Are you gonna get crammed up in a restaurant and
out tonight to some germ terminal where every other scumbag for the one time a year that they take their sloppy ass out with their wife and kids? No.
Did you drop $120 on roses today?
No, I'm not gonna buy roses. I'm gonna go out in the back portion of my property. I'll get some nice native weeds and grasses. I'll stick those in a. Looks like I'm looking out right now. There's some little like white daisy things that are kind of cropping up. I'll organize those things neatly in like a mason jar. It's gonna be Romance City around here.
I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
Share a picture on Slack of it.
What I want to know is what you're really doing for your wife.
He's going out. He's going out.
Your children.
I'm not going to. Do you know what I'm doing for her? I'm going to get my daughter set up with a bunch of toys and some cupcakes for when she comes home. That'll be what makes Mama the happiest.
Mm-hmm. I'm a married man of 9. I'm saying you, at the very least, you better write a sweet note. Like, yeah, do something, Alex.
What am I supposed to do around here, man?
Nothing says love like tomatoes from the backyard.
No, there's no tomatoes here at this place. Too many goddamn deer.
You have a deer rant?
It sounds like those deer. Hope you don't have those zombie deer stealing your tomatoes.
I do have a rant about it. Well, how about this? Like, I have plenty. There's plenty of deer here around where I live, and in this neighborhood, and in this neighborhood association, you're required to have a certain amount of land, and you know, to allow the wildlife to, you know, live here freely and stuff like that. And so my question is, why the hell can't I hunt on my own land? I can understand why I can't shoot anything with like my rifle, but why should I not be able to at least archery hunt on my own land if I can guarantee the fact, if I can basically, I could get within 10, 15 yards of any of these deer. And some of these deers are like 2.5-year-old doe. These are big, juicy. These are eaters. And I can even, like, there's a couple of bucks too. They're all over the place. They eat up every, you can't guard anything around here. You can't do any of that stuff. Why is it if I'm somebody that is dedicated to, and at this point I'm not an archer, but if I did take that up, if I practiced it, if I was guaranteed basically that once I shot the animal, I would be able to retrieve the animal on my own property, it would be in hunting season where I'm a licensed hunter. I would not be shooting a rifle where the bullet would go through the animal and then possibly onto anybody else's property. But it's in my damn HOA's bylaws that I'm not allowed as an American here on my own property to take a bow and to take an arrow and to harvest a white-tailed deer when they're completely overpopulated.
It's pretty easy to answer, Alex.
Why?
You more so, you know what has more power than America?
What?
The HOA. Simple as that.
They do, man.
Simple as that.
Yeah, they have all these rules, and I'm just, but yeah, but so I can literally walk across the street if I got permission from a neighbor to shoot on theirs, because the HOA ends here on my street. But here on my little strip of land, no, I can't take a bow and an arrow. Dude, like I was some kind of
HOA flexing on you, man. That's just the HOA reminding you might be an American and you might own your own land, but the HOA is the boss.
But the that's HOA just owns you.
And if you're not careful,
you got to pay for
shoot a deer, they will send you a well crafted warning note.
Yeah, cease and desist with all this
cockababy deer hunting you're doing on your own land. I'm so glad I pestered you until you had a little bit of a rant. Anwar, what about you? What are you doing for Valentine's Day?
I'm like Alex, not a damn thing.
No, did you do anything last week? Like, have you done a major act of show of love?
Okay, so this is what my wife wanted to do as in lieu of Valentine's Day. So it's called our month of love, and every day this week we exchange notes of what we love about each other. So it's just been, you know, every day we get up and, you know, write something out and we exchange it. We're doing that for 28 days. And she's more excited about that. My wife is more of a, you know, natural, earthy type of person. So, her getting in a crammed restaurant or me paying a lot for stuff, like, that is just not what she wants to do. So something like this, our anniversary, I told you guys we're going to places where we first went and dated. And we lit one of those little papers that, like, fly up in the air. Type of things like that. That's what my wife is into. So I'm not spending a damn dime, to be quite honest with you. I'm good. I got off good. The only thing I want to say is, Ken, you remember a couple of years ago that you and I had this conversation? It was before the off season. You were talking about like my football coverage on game day. You're like, look, good stuff, but at the end of the day, it's just not worth you filing something, 4 hours, 5 hours after the game, and, it's just not worth the bang for a buck. I propose we apply the same for Dustin, and I put this in a thread, can we dropping dimes down to dropping pennies? Because at the end of the day, or dropping nickels, if you want to do it in half, can we just do dropping nickels, dropping pennies? Because after a loss, I just feel so bad for Dustin. I saw something the other day, like he filed his story at like 12:30 at night. And I was just like, damn, dude, I don't even know why you're doing this, man. I had forgotten about K-State. I had moved on. I was just like, it's just another loss. And I just feel for Dustin in this day of love. I just want us to do something to make this basketball season easier for him. And I just propose that dropping dimes becomes the least dropping nickels.
It's an institution. It'd be like, changing
for the weekends.
Or use the Sunday pulpit, just being Sunday.
the good thing about those is they don't like, it's I've got it down to like a science now that like if a game starts like if I have a tip time, I know that I'm going to be done 5 hours after that tip time. And it's like they don't take long to write because I don't know. I guess when you see the same story a lot, you kind of know how to put things together. The only bummer about those things is that it sometimes takes like Bruce Weber took like 35 minutes to show up to the post game after the Kansas State game, and the Texas players in Shaka don't go until after the visiting team, and it's just like shit. Like if I didn't have to transcribe anything, I'd be done and out of there way earlier. But yeah, like I know I'm always of the like I write too much instead of too little. So I think that I would start getting the shakes if I couldn't like write 10 things. Like it would just feel like the world is a different place for me. I unfortunately grew up under the Jeff Ketchum school of writing, which is more words than less words. Like
you're paid by the word.
Yeah, exactly. Like
never leave a thought untold. it's an interesting strategy. I'm just telling you, my highlight of it, honestly, is just going in there and reading our long sarcastic comments and watching you guys go back and forth. Like that's the main highlight I get, to be honest with you.
There hasn't been too much of that lately because I mean, there's not really much to disagree about right now. They kind of are what they are. So yeah, but it's,
and I think the fan base, Dustin, realizes Shock is not going anywhere.
You we've reached the point now in this season. Yeah, and I think they do, because they've seen it from us, they've seen it from everybody else too, and they haven't seen it anywhere nationally. So I think that realization is starting to hit home for them. But we've also reached the point where like every drop in dimes now has like at least two or three posts where it's like, man, like good job on this. I'm so sorry you have to cover this team. Like, we've reached the point where
people feel sympathy for
you. Yeah, they really do, because they know that this is the fourth year of this. And while the first year was pretty exciting, and I think that they did a pretty good job with that group maximizing what they had. But most people know that, like, you know, this is the fourth year of this era, and it's like, it's been the same or worse every single season. So yeah, I'm even getting sympathy posts now at this point where it's just like, man, I feel for you covering this team.
I wonder if you wrote like headline, dropping dimes, number 18, Kansas State was a better team and spoiled a good opportunity for Texas. And then all you wrote was the word poop. One word. Poop, period. I bet there'd be like 15,000 page views on that.
Oh, yeah.
As opposed to like all the actual work you did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's the bummer about like people always kind of try to accuse us of like, oh, you guys look for the bad things, or you want to be negative or this or that. It's like, hell no, man. Like, cause when we get to cover good teams, like everybody reads it more and everybody wants to read it more, and it gets more views and there's more discussion about it. It's, you know, yeah, just covering bad teams is not fun.
My 2020 rankings, like page views, are at least twice the page views of a normal rankings discussion. So all it took was for Texas to have a halfway decent team and to, like, recruiting to be interesting again. And suddenly it feels like that fire has been rekindled.
Oh yeah. Just the idea of, you know, I think that the dialed in posters and the people that subscribe to places like Orange Bloods, like the idea that they know that there's a chance that this 2020 class could be really good because it's coming off of a good 2019 class and a good season. Yeah, it just takes one of those. And, you know, that's kind of what I was making my point about the Texas game earlier this week, is if they would have beat Kansas State and then they would have handled their business and smoked a bad Oklahoma State team at home, they would have sucked a lot of people back in, even though they've been very inconsistent throughout the entire season. So yeah, it just takes one season, really, or one recruiting class or something like that, to where you immediately start to see a shift in the way people engage with the product.
As far as my parting shot, I did go buy flowers. Here's the thing. I had been doing like a self-evaluation of myself in my relationship like a couple of weeks ago. I was driving around and I started thinking about, you know, if you know, because sometimes as when you've been married forever, you know, sometimes, you know, you can nag a little bit. You're not exactly the same person you were when you were courting. So I was like thinking to myself, if I was making a list for my wife of things that I could be better at, like what would they be? And I was like, you know what? I am a hopeless romantic. I am a romantic person, but I haven't been very romantic lately. So like little by little, I've tried to be a little more romantic. Like I haven't engaged in a 28 day free for all, like, Anwar has been forced into, by the way, is it was just one thing a day
that you had to say
one thing a day. What was your thing today? What did your wife say was the thing today that she loved about you? I'm just curious.
I haven't received it yet.
I mean, what's going to be her thing?
I don't know. I'm going to say, man, I love that you don't want to celebrate Valentine's Day. I think that's what makes you special. I think that's what it's going to end up being.
On Valentine's Day, you're officially doing the least amount of work on this project that you're doing on the other days.
Yes.
I don't know. I just might be anti-Valentine's Day and love you for it.
Yeah, and I've had to double up because I forgot a couple times. So I've just had to, like, give her, like, two at once. Yeah.
Well, so I was at HEB yesterday doing some shopping for non-Valentine's. No, I did have to go in for Valentine's Day stuff because I had to buy cookies for my kids' class party. By the way, my daughter, who's 4, went into her classroom today wearing her princess dress, and this little boy walked up to her and goes, "Haven, you look super pretty." And I it was cute, but I wondered at what point I'd want to body that dude up against a wall and be like, you know, when does the protective dad kick in? I don't know. It wasn't there today. I just wondered at what point will a kid in front of me walk up and like start trying to mack on my daughter, and that will like, you know, make me want to be physical with him. I don't know when that happens.
Middle school.
You think in middle school?
Middle school.
12? Oh yeah. There'll be some smart ass 12-year-old absolutely that I want to choke slam. But so I had to go buy cookies for their classrooms. But yesterday, I was walking through the HEB floral department, and I saw, I didn't know how much it cost. I'm sure, you know, I looked at it and immediately was like, oh, that's probably expensive. But it looked perfect, and it had tulips in it. And it was the only arrangement in the entire section of like roses and things that they had tulips, which my wife absolutely adores. So I just grabbed this monster arrangement, because if you're going to get flowers for Valentine's Day, the time to get them is the day before everybody's like rampaged the section like Valentine's Day morning. So yeah, I brought home flowers last night. My wife's already taken photos of them and like sent them to her family members. So I think I'm pretty good. Like, dad might get laid tonight. It should happen. Like, the rest of you don't sound like any action's happening on Valentine's
Day. Oh, action's happening tonight.
Well, Dustin, you haven't said what you – I expect you to do something nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she'll get something at work in a little bit, and then we're going to try some new restaurant down in the east side somewhere, and then probably go have a nightcap afterwards. Oh, yeah, we got some plans tonight.
Boom shakalaka.
We got some plans.
It's funny, as my wife said, you know, when we first got together, every Valentine's Day, you know, there'd be flowers at my workplace, like, and it was so awesome. And all my people that I work with would like gush over my flowers. And I was like, yeah, but you ain't got no job no more. So which would you rather have? Stay at home and not have to work, or go to work on Valentine's Day and get your flowers?
How did that work out for you?
It was a checkmate moment in the conversation. To be completely honest with you, I think we just started talking about something else.
Well, you got a flower, so I mean, you did the thing. You did the thing.
That compliment happened after I gave her a monstrous, as she said, the vase is big enough to put a baby in it, which was a weird thing for me to think out loud. Like, I was like, huh, you saw how big the vase was, and you thought we could drown a baby in the vase. It was a weird thing to kind of hear her say. She didn't say drown. She just said it's big enough to put a baby in it.
No, but you know, Kent, my pimp go-to move for years always used to be, the person I was dating, I would get them flowers for like maybe like a week and a half before Valentine's Day, when they were actually cheaper. And then when Valentine's Day rolled around, Kent be like, you just got flowers like a week and a half ago. Not going to do that again. And then I'm just getting something else.
Because then it diminishes the previous purchase.
Yeah. So it was always like a week and a half. You get a whole dozen or whatever for like $20, having all, you know, put all the decorations in it and stuff like that. $20 and I'm pip game, but I'm not gonna expect it again.
Fellas, you can't be romantic enough with your women. Write her a note, tell her something beyond a sentence. That's meaningful. That's my final parting message, is don't look at Valentine's Day as the artificial invented date by card companies and candy makers who just want to take your money, and it's not really a holiday, and so you shouldn't embrace it, and it's cliche, and you don't want to be that guy who's buying flowers for his wife on Valentine's Day because that's what guys are doing, and you're not cliche, so you don't want to do it. It's a day of love. Like, we don't love enough. Believe me, we don't love each other enough. So if we have to have a day that someone arbitrarily has set aside to say, hey, do something nice, show some capacity of love that you have never showed before, or you haven't shown in a while, that's not a bad thing. Fellas, embrace the Valentine's Day. Do something sweet. Do something nice. Don't think about what your confirmation bias in your head thinks about Valentine's Day. You love your wife. You love your kids. You love your mom. You know, you might have a mom out there that hasn't heard from you today. Call her up. Happy Valentine's Day. Be her Valentine. It's not a terrible thing. I feel like Bill Murray at the end of Scrooge when he's trying to sing the virtues of Christmas, but it's true. Be a changed person. Be a little bit better version of yourself and use this moment, use this day to show a little bit of love when you might not otherwise do so. And then who knows, maybe you can build off of that and one day can be a second day and then a second day can be a third day. And the next thing you know, you're back to giving the amount of love that deep down you always wanted to give when you thought about the idea of being in love. And on that note, thank you for listening. If you made it this far to the Ticket City Orange Bloods podcast, for Jeff and Jason and Anwar and Alex and Dustin, some more romantic than others, some just wanting to go into their backyard and shoot something, we'll talk to you next time. Later.